Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. April Pucciotta has been teaching yoga in New York City, Washington, D.C., and New Jersey for almost two decades. She's the founder and creator of Beyond Om, and teaches yoga trainings and workshops throughout the U.S. and leads retreats all over the world. April's background includes certification and many extra hours and courses with Ishta Yoga and Yogiraj Allen Finger. April's also studied with many other renowned teachers, including Rod Stryker, Sean Korn, Janice Clairfield, Mark Whitwell, and Judith Lassiter. April helps yoga teachers and healers stay creative, inspired, and connected through ancient practices and modern-day tools, providing them with support so they can shine. I've had the pleasure of teaching teacher training with April in Maryland and Washington, D.C., and it was great to have a chance to catch up and hear what she's been up to. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hi, April.
Hi, Peter.
So you are where now?
Asbury Park, New Jersey.
You and Springsteen.
Yes, he just showed up at a movie we went to the other day. Yeah.
That's cool.
It was called the Springsteen Archives, I think. So they have like a whole archive thing at the Monmouth College down here. Uh-huh. And so we went to go see that at there was a music and film festival. And so he showed up after to answer some questions.
Very cool.
Yeah, I have to say it was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Does he do yoga? Do you know?
I don't know. I would love to do yoga with him and his wife Patty. I think they're very cool. So yeah. I have not. I mean, people around here run in. It's not like unheard of at all. It's very common for people to kind of see him and run into him. And I don't know that specifically, but I would not be surprised because I know, you know, he was very big into like working out and being physically fit and being, they have to with what he does.
Totally. Yeah. Well, cool. And how long have you been in Asbury Park?
I have been in Asbury Park about 2.5 years and
long enough to settle in.
Long. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm from New Jersey, so it's not completely new to me. We used to come down here in my like high school younger days to see some music and things like that. But, yeah, I never thought I would come back to New Jersey. If you had said this to me 10 or 15 years ago, I would have said, yeah, no.
That's pretty common with people from New Jersey. What is it about New Jersey that sends folks away and never lets them look back?
Well, you know, I think I've found this in different parts of the country, not just here, but when I talk to people. And I think people are either of a mindset where they settle in and they don't leave their hometown or their home state, or they want to, you know, get out and they can't wait to get out. And so when I was in high school, I could not wait to get out. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted freedom. I wanted to explore. I wanted all of that. So
and I think with people who are artistic, being so close to New York City is a super draw.
Yeah, I was a little afraid to go to New York. I didn't go right to New York. I went to Boston first. It was like my starter city for college. And I used to say after Boston, I went right to New York City. And I was like, I'll never go back to New Jersey. But I think then you grow up and then you see the good things about your hometown, or, you know, your family draws you back. My father was very sick a few years ago. And he passed away. And a few months later, my sister had her baby, my nephew. Mm. And I was like, I just want to go back. I want to go back. I want to be with them. And, you
know,
I think it's always good to go out and explore and do your thing and find out a little bit more about who you are And then it's always, for me, I felt it was nice to come back to family.
Yeah, that's great.
And feel grounded. Yeah.
So in doing all this moving, and we were just chatting about how I'm moving, trying to be moving right before we got online here. But, you know, having lived in a few different places, you and I have been circling around each other because I grew up in Maryland. We both ended up teaching in Maryland and then in DC, and we both taught together in New York City. And what's it been like to be moving and trying to keep creating a community of people you're teaching?
Well, I think that's the one nice thing about being, you know, in New Jersey. When I was in New York, I taught there for 10 years. So I felt very secure. I felt very, you know, I had my 10 block radius.
Yeah.
So the move to Maryland and teaching in DC was, I think, really good and necessary in many ways, but I always missed New York. And it got me out of my comfort zone, and it kind of taught me a lot about how to sustain a career if I want to keep teaching, if this is what I want to keep doing full time. So it was challenging in DC because just commuting there was tough.
Because you were living in Baltimore, right?
We were living in Baltimore and we had a studio apartment in DC. So that made it a little bit easier. And I think just really, really building connections, and the connections that you build now are so different than how you did it 15 years ago. So even when I was coming back to New Jersey, I started really building my community before I got here. I mean, it sounds so funny, but I was making connections on Instagram, on Facebook, on, you know, reaching out to teachers that way. So when I got here, I felt like I knew people in a way already.
Right.
You know, I recognized someone at an event. So I was a little smarter when I moved here. I should have thought more about that. Hindsight is 2020, right? When I moved down to DC. My sister said to me, you have to have a Facebook page, you have to have an Instagram page. And I was like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
But it would have been really helpful back then to have had that. But I established that. And so moving here, I definitely felt more grounded already when I arrived. Plus my family was here. But yeah, building that community, it definitely takes effort.
Yeah.
Definitely takes
and time,
effort.
Right?
And time.
Like, how long did it take you to feel like you had some stuff going on in those moves?
In DC?
Either one.
Yeah. It took a while in Maryland. And it took, and really what happened in Maryland was I started teaching in DC. And that's when I really started to feel like I was finding my footing. I reached out to Sarah, to Alan's wife. And I said, I'm going to be down there. Do you want some help with the teacher training?
Right.
And she was like, oh, that would be great. So that kind of gave me a little bit of a home at first, which I was like super grateful for. And then I started going into DC, and the yoga community there for whatever reason just seemed much more interested in having me come and teach. And so even though it was further away, I had a lot kind of to do there and explore there. So I think you have to be a student, you know, so I feel like that was something that I'm pretty willing to do. You can't just kind of walk into a place and be like, I taught yoga for 10 years in New York, hire me. You know, you have to be able to be a student and meet people and let them know where you're coming from. And, you know, you really have to start from scratch.
It's a little bit of humility involved.
Absolutely. It was very humbling. It was very humbling moving from New York City down to Maryland and the DC area, for sure. It was very humbling. And I think that's a good experience.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of,
I mean, good. We had that when we went to Long Island also, you know, it was like, no one knows who you are out there, even though it was only an hour train ride away.
Yeah. And it was surprising to me because, and I don't know if you had this in, maybe not Long Island, but I kind of thought everyone knew Al and Ishta. And I was like, we need this down here. Need this down here. And they weren't as aware because Al kind of just flies under the radar sometimes. Yeah. But he's such a great teacher.
Well, they're trying to do more and more online. So that's expanding.
I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good thing. I mean, there's always that talk about online teaching versus like being, you know, in front of people. But I think they both can have their benefits. And I think this is one way that they can really reach more people.
Yeah. What about in your own teaching? How much are you looking at doing stuff online?
I actually just did a level one meditation teacher training that I put online. And that was intense. So
was it online like one time to many people, or is it you were interacting with the people in Zoom or something like that?
So we did have like we had a live Facebook page, okay, but it was all like recorded audio and video. And I actually did a business course, mm-hmm, to figure out like just kind of how to put this together. And so just taking an online course, if it's a good one, will show you how to do things,
mm-hmm,
right? So it was a good kind of template to take the course. And then I decided, because my teaching has been limited since my surgery. So I decided I needed to kind of just slow down a little bit, because again, I've been all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did this course, and then I put this meditation training online. And so I really put my heart and soul into it. I really put my heart and soul into it. And I had 22 people sign up.
Wow.
And it's there.
Yeah.
It's there. And I have a group, and I keep in, you know, I make sure that I touch base with everyone. They have a final assignment. They have to send me a video. And so I really try to make it as interactive as possible. But I felt like a lot of yoga teachers and a lot of people really want this, and they don't get, I mean, in a 200-hour training, how much, you know, you can't get that much. So I really wanted teachers to have access to this. So I put it online. It's on a platform called Teachable.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I just ran it. And then it's closed. So you can't, you know, join it. I'll probably run it again in the fall. So, but I really did put my heart and soul into it. It was really rewarding. And to have that as I'm getting, I don't want to say older, but as
we're
I'm trying to be a little more grounded, it's nice to, you know that it's complete now and I can add to it and I can make it better. And yeah, but I think it went fairly well for the first time.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Some of my favorite radio stations right now are doing their fun drives. It's annoying to hear about it in the middle of what are interesting talks, but a whole lot less annoying than hearing about various products that I don't care about at all. At least I care about the radio station and want to know that it's doing well. I'm trying to make Peter's podcast also a nonprofit that is funded commercial-free. So would you help me out? Go to patreon.com/peterspodcast and fund me for any amount you like. And then you don't have to hear commercials in the middle of Peter's podcast. Cool. Namaste. It's such a big deal to do, you know, anything outside of the normal routine of teaching classes and whatnot. It becomes such an entrepreneurial thing.
Yes.
And the other place you've been so entrepreneurial is in terms of doing retreats, which has been awesome.
Yeah.
To watch happen on Instagram.
Yeah. You know, what's that quote? The quote about, you know, traveling is the one thing you can buy that will make your life richer.
Mm.
And since I was in high school and I wanted to leave New Jersey, I just want to experience different places, different people. I think that's what makes us grow as people, when you can see other cultures and experience that and have conversations with people. There's something really enriching about that. And
yeah.
I do really think it's important, and mm-hmm. not just in New Jersey. We can say it about people in New Jersey, but I've met people in Maryland from Baltimore who've never left Baltimore, who've
wow.
never left New Jersey. And I get why, because right now, you know, like I said, I like my 10 block radius, I'm here, but I really also do think it's so important to talk to different people and visit different places and see different things. It keeps me inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's such a great thing. And, you know, when I was growing up, there was this kind of maybe a economic barrier, like, you know, in the generation before me, like two generations before me, people would travel only like to get out of Europe and to move to migrate mm-hmm. here, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, growing up with parents of that generation, it was like, oh yeah, wealthy people travel. But now
right.
it's like everyone can travel, it seems. I'm not really sure if that's still true
yeah.
because we get locked in our own sort of socioeconomic bubble.
Totally.
But, you know, it is expensive to go somewhere. It's expensive to go on yoga retreats. But
I mean, when you think about
how.
It, it's just expensive for me to get into New York City.
Exactly.
So, that's definitely has to be a consideration. I think when I talk to the millennials now, it's so amazing to me too, because they have so much available to them online. They know so much about different countries and they speak different languages. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, I wish I had a little bit of that. So, I think just, you know, whether you're staying put or you're out there, you know, exploring, you know, I just think you have to be a student in whatever way possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And keep growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of being a student and growing and changing, you had this issue with your neck.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
You know, I literally got up from a chair and I felt something down my kind of like the back of my shoulder blade. And I was like, oh. And it, you know, it got progressively worse. I thought it would work itself out. I was seeing an acupuncturist. I was seeing a chiropractor. It got so bad that I couldn't sign my name.
Wow.
My arm felt like you couldn't touch me. Like I couldn't have a sleeve on. It felt like my skin was just peeling off. Not to be gross. I couldn't sleep. I should have gotten an MRI way sooner. And and so
note to yoga students who ask their teacher, I have this going on, when we say, mm-hmm. have you seen a doctor?
Yeah.
Go see the doctor.
Because, you know, more information is always better. And, you know, I think I saw some holistic people,
mm-hmm.
Some which were very good and some which I feel like, I was in so much pain and I just wish someone had made me get an MRI sooner. And my surgeon, my doctor, I'm just so grateful I found him. Because originally I was just going to have a shot or something.
Yeah,
cortisone or something. Yeah. And or they go right into the disc and they try to make it resolve itself. And he was just like, that, I don't see that happening with what you had. He goes, we can try. He gave me all the information. He spent so much time with me. He let me make the. I mean, really,
was
really
one of
wasn't
the vertebrae
a decision.
cracked or broken or something?
I had a herniated disc.
Okay.
And it was hitting the nerve. And so like my whole arm, they told me afterwards they had actually seen people not get full use of their arm back after the degree of like the herniation that I had. So it's just really weak. I lost like all the strength in this arm. So it's really been... And I didn't really, like, after the surgery, I woke up, they took the tube out, and I felt them take the tube out, but I was, like, still really out of it. But all I could think of was, like, my arm. And I could lay down, I was lying down, and my arm, I wasn't in pain. And I could start crying about it, thinking about it. I couldn't even open my eyes yet, but I was crying because I had been in pain for so long. So...
Wow.
I was like Wonder Woman when I left there. I was like, let's go, let's do, I had the thing around. Like I left the hospital, they replaced the disc. Yeah,
wow.
I'll have to send you a picture of it. You can see it. It's kind of disturbing, but it's kind of cool. If it was someone else, I would think it was really cool. But when I know it's in me, it gets a little a little weird feeling. But so they did that, and then I was going. Somehow I made it to my retreat to Portugal, and then I came back and I like crashed. So, and I'm just starting to like, I feel like get some energy back, and I was okay to do my spinning class now. But it's, wow. Is that a lesson in, again, patience and just slowing down and,
yeah,
like trying to do all the things that we talk about as yoga teachers, like listen to your body,
right?
And then you have to get over a lot of fear. Yeah. So,
because it's one thing to be altering your practice the way you know how, but it's also you're nervous about hurting yourself.
Terrified. I've never, I've had this motto the last 5 years, like don't let everything scare you. it was more like business-wise, like whether you're trying a retreat or you're trying this thing online, or like, don't let, stop being so afraid to kind of put yourself out there, right? But this is like a whole different thing. I remember I got in the car and I bumped my head, and I just, my mother and my husband were with me, and I just started like crying. I was like, oh, is my head going to fall out? Like I was terrified
Right.
So it's a lot to get over, but I'm getting there, and I'm teaching and getting stronger. Yeah. So I'm just,
and you are teaching.
I teach four or five classes a week now. So I'm on a limited schedule, which is okay, 'cause I have other, projects that I'm working on. I might be doing another online class. It's good. I really needed to take that time. I mean, I don't know if you did this, because I think when I met you, you were working as a designer still, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
This was a long time ago, I feel like. I remember having this conversation with you, I think, in the studio on the Upper East Side. And I think you taught a class. I don't know why I remember it, but it was a while ago. But I, at that time, I mean, I would teach between classes and privates 20, 25 a week, and I didn't think anything of it.
Wow.
Anything of it.
It's amazing. Youthful energy.
Yeah. Youthful energy. I don't know if sometimes I think being in New York made it easier. And then sometimes now I have the luxury of, car, which is still kind of crazy to me because I didn't drive for so long. Do you guys have a car out there?
We have a car, yeah.
Yeah. It's.
We have a big dog, so if we ever need to go anywhere, we sort of need to drive ourselves.
Yes, yes.
Even taxis don't like to pick up the dog.
Oh, they don't? I would think that. Yeah. So it's like I have the car now, which is crazy. And I think, when I was in New York, you would just like trudge through the snow. You just went where you had to go. I would teach 20, 25 classes a week and I was just really happy. I had classes to teach and private clients and I could make it,
Yeah.
I was happy I wasn't in an office, I think. So for me, that was like so much freedom. I really love that. But now
you don't want to do it now. A lot of the students who've been taking our trainings lately have been finding places they can teach right away. Mm. You know, some various studios have been sort of a funnel for, yeah, you can get your first class here, mm-hmm. and it gives them the opportunity to do what you're doing. So I'm finding that a lot of these recent grads from our, you know, whole 500 hours of training are like teaching, you know, 5 days a week. So yeah, it's great.
So there's still enough classes out there that they can like fill their schedule and survive.
Yeah, I don't know if they're making money, but you know,
that's what I'm wondering, because
most of them have been doing something else anyway while they're doing their training, so they at least have whatever that base is, and they start trying to teach and transition toward that.
Because I mean honestly, now I feel the classes, I mean, not all of my classes, but I mean, there are classes here and even in DC where 10 years later, I was making more in New York City, you know, I was making more in New York City per class. So it's like, I don't know how people could do even 20, 25, unless if you're doing private clients. I mean, I had a good amount of private clients too. So it's interesting to me how people make it work. I think you really have to, I don't know if you've find this, but it really kind of helps, because I wanted to be everywhere and be able to do everything and teach everything. But I think when you hone in a little bit more and really find something special that's special to you that you want to teach, I think that's helpful.
Yeah, sure. Then you're not dissipating this energy all over the place. It's tricky, but it's true. It's very true.
Yeah.
Depends if you're more of a Renaissance man type.
Right. Sure. So, when I did the meditation training, someone said to me, well, you're going to like pigeonhole yourself.
That's
and I
funny.
Said, well, but people want this. And, it, you know, kind right. of work. I actually did a live training down here too. And they both did really well. So I think sometimes, I mean, and it's not that it's the only thing I want to teach, but it's something that I really love to teach.
Right.
So.
Well, I think that, let me ask you this, because it's something that I always, I don't know, I sort of struggle with how to respond to the way people use Instagram, way yoga teachers and yoga students. You know, it's like that classic picture of Nataraj asana in front of the this and in front
I've
of the that.
I've got a couple of those, yeah.
Yes, I know you do. But, on the one hand, I totally get it. On the other hand, it's like perpetuating this notion that, you know, yoga is about how well can one do big back bends or, you know, standing on one's hands or something like that. And so, you know, being someone who like intentionally decided I have to do an Instagram thing for marketing, how do you think about it? Because you teach obviously the whole range of yoga and always have.
So I was very, I don't know if against, I don't want to say against Instagram. I wasn't against Instagram, but I didn't see the point in it as a yoga teacher. And I thought, that's not yoga. And then I read a post, or I don't know if it was a post or an article, and it was written by Robert Sturman, who I'm now friendly with, and he's a yoga photographer, right? And he was writing about someone he photographed, and you know, people I think there was some of this backlash. And he wrote something that really rang true with me. And it was like, you don't know her heart. And so I always think that, I hear it for some reason when I look at and I also heard some very good advice from someone. If you're scrolling through Instagram and something triggers you, stop following that person. You know, it's like the TV, you can turn it off. If something triggers you and it's not authentic to you and it's not real to you, and turn it, you know, just don't follow that person anymore. But I think everybody has their own story. There's so much about me. I mean, I've shared a lot of things about my injury this last year, about my surgery, but there's so much about me that I don't make public on those posts that people don't know.
Right.
And it's so true. You know, there's a lot about me you don't know in my heart. So I think, you know, I've connected in so many ways with people on Instagram who, you know, whether they're doing a handstand or not a handstand, I've become friends with and close with, and I've learned a lot from. And so when I see things like that, that's what I started thinking. Like, I don't know her heart, and I don't know why he or she is doing this. If it's really triggering me, I won't follow that person anymore. If it doesn't seem true to me, if it doesn't touch me in some way. But I don't think you have to do Instagram, but it's the world that we're in, and I want to teach, and I want to share, and I want to see what other people are doing. Because again, I think to be a student, you have to be open to everything that's out there. So
And keep learning and keep plugging in.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you don't want to do a dancer pose on the beach, that's okay. But I think if someone wants to do a dancer pose on the page, I mean, you know, our body is part of yoga. And so why not? And I also think that using or, you know, photographs can be so artistic. So I don't necessarily think it's bad or wrong to bring all of that together if it's inspiring people. And if it's not inspiring you, don't follow it. And don't assume that you can tell something about a person in a photo or on their Instagram account. So yeah, that's I guess what I would points. I would say about that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm teaching a workshop at Ishta Yoga on May 21st. The workshop is called Real Happiness, the Bhagavad Gita as the Human Owner's Manual. Come and learn about this remarkable resource and have some fun in the process. You can call in as well, although it's in the evening U.S. East Coast time. If you do decide to call in, drop a line to the email in my show notes so you're sure to get the call-in info. I look forward to seeing you there. Hari Om Tat Sat, which is a mantra we'll talk about because it's in the Bhagavad Gita. See you there. You gave me a perfect segue into this thing about artistic, and I know you're a poet. And are you doing anything with that work still?
So I have been writing a lot. I've been writing a lot. Now I have to organize it. But I've
organized it like the ideas into things or organizing the body of work?
Organizing the body of work, editing, and then getting it out. Like, so I need to start editing, honing, and then start submitting. So I went through a phase maybe 6 months ago where I submitted a bunch of stuff. And, you know, it's so easy now because... Again, 20 years ago, you had to mail everything out, right? And then you would wait for the rejection letter, or every once in a while, maybe an acceptance letter. So Yeah, so now you can do so much of this online, and I really just have to, I feel like I just need to sit down and maybe set like a schedule, like today I write. And I've just been enjoying writing so much that the organizing, I'm not feeling it yet, but I know it's got to be done. Mm-hmm. I know it has to be done, but it's actually nice to be able to sit and have that ability to, I don't know, just be more inspired or have the time maybe, or I feel like there's been so much self-reflection this last year, that it's really something I've been trying to do like almost every day. Wow. But now I just need to organize. I mean, you've written some books, so yeah, I don't know what, like, I'd love to know what your process.
Right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you sit down and like write all of it and then go back, or do you do chapter per chapter, or?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you get it all out.
And... I mean, the thing is that I get inspired by the characters and the story, and that's what keeps me going in it. So I'll go back and like read again, and then I'm all swept up in it, and then I can continue on with the next plot point or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I don't usually map out like the beats of the plot in advance. Okay. Sometimes there'll be a notion about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Fiction writing is always interesting to me because I've tried it and I'm not good at it. I like the here's the poem.
It stays on one page.
Yeah, I mean every once in a while I get one that goes over to the second page, but
yeah
there's something about that format that I really love I've always like loved to work with. It's just overwhelming to think about a whole big, I really admire that. My husband writes short stories, and even those I'm like, I don't know how you do it. But I love to read fiction, and I love to read short stories, and they'll inspire some of my poetry for sure. But what I used to do is I would have like 3 to 5 that I'd be working with editing. But now I just want to like just sit down and write, but I need to bring a little more structure into it now. So if you have any advice for me, I'm happy to take it.
You know, I really think it's like the, when you get inspired thing, you know, like what you were just saying, you're not feeling the motivation for doing X, but you are for doing the other, you know, like do what you're loving doing, you know?
That's interesting. I've never thought about it that way. I think of it like I kind of think of writing as, you know, when I'm thinking about it seriously, like as a writer, it's like you sit down and you do it.
Right.
And sometimes inspiration doesn't come. So I'll write about the weather, or I'll write about whatever it is. But I try to make that time to just sit down and do it. So it's the same thing with the structure. I just feel like I have to sit down and do it sometimes.
Yeah.
And then once you get into it, sometimes then the inspiration comes.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, that's definitely a way. That's the artist's way, right?
Yeah.
You know, do it. Do your pages every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never care. I think I'm not disciplined enough in my own nature.
I think you are more inspired.
Exactly.
I think you're more inspired all the time. If I only wrote when I was inspired, I don't know if I would ever produce anything.
But I don't know. When we moved away, I stopped writing for like 2 years.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But I just wasn't like in the mood. There was something about being in this other environment that I didn't have the place to go where I would work. Like I used to love writing in cafes. There were no cafes.
Okay.
That had that vibe. So I was trying to find other places to write. So I actually wrote a whole big section of a story sitting at a like a marina bar.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked.
That's nice.
But that's not good for one's health, you know, to just hang out in bars. So, but
probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a balance, like what?
Yeah.
Like what everything else.
When I first started teaching, I couldn't write at all. I was like barely writing because my thing was I'm too happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm too happy right now.
Yeah.
I changed a lot of my habits.
Right.
And I was like, what am I going to write about?
Yeah.
I need to write about sagas and dramas. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, there's plenty to draw on. I just think that was a little bit of an excuse.
Maybe. I had that experience with songwriting, where songwriting so often is like from pain or upset or disappointment or something like that motivated mm-hmm. a lyric.
Absolutely.
And then when things were not that way, it was much harder to figure out how to write about something that wasn't sad or down or bad, but how do you write about something positive? So
it's got to be, for me, it's like something I have to like really feel. I remember the first time my mother, I had published in a magazine, in a literary magazine, and my parents were never, they didn't really seem that interested in that part of my life, but they were so proud of me because it was published. So I showed my mom the journal and she just looked at it and she said, "Oh my God, this is so depressing." And I said, I was like, well, that's not the reaction I was expecting, but okay. I guess it made her feel something. So
yeah,
that's good. But you know, so I guess it's even, in the yoga practice, like you need a break from certain things sometimes, or you need to shift how your practice is evolving or how you're practicing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess there's just ebbs and flows in everything.
I think it's life, you know, I mean, sort of looking back on my life, it's like chapters, you know, where this mm-hmm. was going on and then this was going on in the next chapter. And then, you know, I'm never doing the thing that was back in chapter 3 anymore. it's just like a different me back then.
Yes. Chapter 3. That's probably when I was smoking.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I equate with writing, because I used to smoke and it sounds so fun. It's a horrible thing for a yogi to say, as people think I'm horrible when I say it, but I'm like, I miss it. I still miss it. It's been 15 years. I still miss it.
Sure.
Like just the ritual of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was way back in
chapter 3.
Baby April. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find any connection between practicing yoga or practicing meditation and doing your writing? Like, do you think it's helped you in some ways or not helped you?
It's in some ways, I don't know if it's the, like I said, I don't think it's so much the yoga. It's that my life had changed in certain ways, maybe because of the yoga or because I was practicing yoga, there wasn't so much drama. But I do play with sometimes if I sit down and I journal and I write and then I do my meditation, sometimes people say to do it the other way, right?
Yeah.
To do your meditation and then journal. But sometimes I actually find that when I sit down for half an hour and I write, my meditation is actually, I don't want to say powerful, but I'm just much more calm. I'm much more still. I get so much more out of it sometimes. So
that's,
I don't know,
beautiful.
If it's kind of like I'm releasing a little bit, almost like you would be doing like asana, right? Before before I sit down to meditate. So I definitely think they affect one another for sure. And then sometimes I do my meditation and I'm, you know, meditating, or I, right after I get out of meditation, and I'll have an idea come to me, and it could be writing wise. And sometimes it's even just like business wise or family wise, like an idea sure. that I hadn't thought of before. So I definitely think they affect one another. I don't know what comes first, like the chicken or the egg, as they would say. Mm-hmm. I think they can both, it can work both ways, but I definitely notice that they affect one another for sure. Yeah. Do you have a way that you like to,
you know, it's so funny because I wrote a book, Yoga for Artists, where I talked about the how yoga can be helpful for artists, but I wasn't thinking of it in ways of like exercises, because there are people who, you know, they try to make a class of some kind and then you do your art practice somehow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I was always like, I had ways to do my art practice, mm-hmm. regardless of what it was, because I've switched media a few times. Right. So whatever it was like, I was inspired to do that part. But yes. I found that doing my yoga practice and having meditation as a tool really helped with the things that other people were saying was hard for them, you know, mm-hmm. like coming up with an idea or having a writer's block or being inspired, period.
Yeah.
I didn't experience those things in the same way when I had this practice. It's like the practice was keeping me sane. And like what you're saying, I think the art and the yoga samyama, that piece of like when between meditation and back in life, mm-hmm. those two are so much the same thing. Mm. So when you're sitting down and you're writing in your journal and you're just like opening to what's going to come, that's exactly like what happens as you open into the meditating zone, or from there out back out or mm-hmm. into it, you know. But we, as artists, I think we learn how to hold in that space and allow inspiration.
Mm. Yeah.
And so that's what's beautiful. Flowing. But then we bring our pen to our page or our brush to the canvas or whatever.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think also it's that idea of whether you're sitting down and you're writing or you're painting or you're meditating, or there's no screen in front of you. And so you just go, you can go to that space. So even if, like I was saying, I'm trying to write and nothing's coming. Okay, so I'm sitting there and I'm bored, right? But we're not bored anymore. So what's wrong with that? That's where I feel like a lot of ideas come from. I was listening to something on, I'm always listening to NPR. This was a while ago, and people were like, oh, when I'm dry. I think there was a book out called like Tinker, Dabble, Doodle, Try, or something like that. Is that the name of the book?
I don't know it.
And he was talking about, the author was talking about just being bored and how that's good really thing. Good for your brain. And people used to walk around without being attached to their phones. And they would have all of these, you know, this one woman called in. She's like, I used to walk my baby in the park in a stroller. And that was before phones. And she said, I would go home and I would write down all of these ideas that I had for what I was going to do when the baby was older and what I was going to create. And we don't do that anymore. So I think just to put all of that aside is for me extremely helpful. But as from what I know of the science as well, for your brain, it's supposed to be really helpful too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But to be able to hold that space.
Well, it's a part of our nature that we're just not allowing ourselves to have anymore.
I agree. So, I agree.
You know, and then it makes it so that if you lay down and you try to go to sleep and your mind is still like saying, wait, I'm supposed to be looking for something. You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah.
All that
decompression
time. I got to
check that phone before I go to
go to bed. Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to get decompression time in the day, you know, walking the baby or just sitting in the subway, you know, like literally just sitting, waiting for the train.
Yep.
And experiencing the temperature of the air and listening to the sound of the birds if you're in an elevated or an open station. You know, we don't do those things anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel very grateful that I'm so close to the ocean. And it's just, I just like, we'll just go and look. And I feel like that's really, whether it's my writing or it's what I'm, or my meditation, or if it's something, you know, business wise that I'm working on, it's just so good. So like you said, that's such a nice way to put it, like just to hold that space for just letting your mind do what it's going to do. And if you're meditating to get still, if you're just allowing yourself to have a creative moment, I think that's something about, I mean, especially if you don't have to use your iPhone, I guess, but I think that's, I love to watch people like take photos with like a real camera. Like they just look so passionate and focused, right? Focused.
Yeah.
So yeah, put it down for a minute. I mean, look, I'm on it plenty. I'm guilty of it too. So I'm not sitting here preaching, but put it down for a little. I mean, and it's amazing. Like, look what we're able to do with technology, right? Well, like, look what we're able to do. So I have a great appreciation for it. And at the same time, you know, I try to find that balance.
Yeah, that's completely it. You know, you have to figure out when is it taking you over and when are you using it, and you can use it, but there's a line that you have to draw.
Yeah. That was an amazing, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. That was an amazing thing when we first year we went to Cuba. No internet, no, like nobody could use their phone. And you could tell, like, the first 24 hours, people were, like, just picking it up and they didn't know, like, what to do with themselves. And when we got back, it was so funny. Months later, even years after that first trip, people would be like, God, I wish somebody could just take my phone away again like that for a week.
Wow.
It was such a great experience for everyone, they said. It totally freaked them out at first.
Yeah.
But then they were just able to like enjoy.
What a great consulting business. I will take your phone away from you for a week.
Yeah.
I have students who are online in class.
Yeah.
And
how do you handle that?
Well, the ones who are, like, every now and then I'll ask them, you know, and there's always a reason that's related to work, you know, like I'm here, I'm supposed to be at the office.
Right.
And all I'm doing is watching to see, does my boss need something right now?
Right.
Or something along those lines.
Right.
And so I don't know.
Yeah.
As long as it's not dinging or something like that or distracting other people, I just let them have their thing.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah. It's not worth a fight. It's not, and I don't want to say a fight, but it's,
they've
I'm
made
glad
a choice.
They're there. I'm glad they're there and they're trying and they're going to do what they can do. So in some respect, they feel like, well, then go to work. But in another respect, they feel like, well, if this is going to give them a little bit of something today that's useful for them, then great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, it's funny. Or now people have the watches. So they now I notice that. Like they'll put the phone away, but they have the watch.
Right.
I don't know. I don't have a watch, so I don't know what you can do with it, but it looks like they're doing things with it.
It's like an interface with your phone for a bunch of different apps.
Oh,
so
right.
It could even be the text or it could be a message or crazy.
That's the
what do you got on your agenda coming up? You're going to continue with your maybe another course. You've got your classes that you're teaching.
Yeah, I'll probably do another course. The big thing I'm working on right now is Headstands for Hunger, which is a week from Sunday.
Wow. Right? A but week you're not from doing Sunday. Headstands.
Oh, God, no. It's Headstands, it's just a name.
Yeah.
It's a name of the woman who, Vanessa Van Noy, is the creator of this. She doesn't do headstands either. She just came up with the name about 8 or 9 years ago. And it's an event that was done in Monmouth County, New Jersey, in Asbury. It's done every year. I think it's going to go into its 8th year. And this is the 2nd year we're doing it in Jersey City. And so she wanted to expand to help more people. So we, people come and they bring food donations. And the food donations go to St. Matthew's Lutheran Church, to the food pantry there. And then also to the Liberty Humane Society. So we help feed people and pets. So I'm sure you know, hunger is a huge issue in the United States. And there are many food insecure people, so, and families. And St. Matthew's, I think they said they feed like 850 families a month. So there are no headstands necessary. It's an all levels class. It's at Harborside Atrium a week from Sunday, May 19th. Doors open at 9. The class starts around 10. So if anyone wants to come, if you'd like to come, come on out. We have, I think, 7 teachers. We have music. We have a photographer. Everyone's donating their time. And we got 2 beautiful emails last year from both the organizations saying thank you. So we want to grow the event every year up there, like we've done in Monmouth County. And it's something I'm really happy about that I can do here now that I'm a little more grounded, is some more service. So I'm involved in that. And then I'm involved in something down here called Clean Ocean Action. So they're very much about clean water and helping to stop offshore drilling. And so we're going to be doing something this summer. I'm going to be doing something with them this summer as well. So,
fantastic.
Yeah. That was something I really, because, you know, DC is so community oriented, but I just didn't have the time to maneuver a lot of things like that there.
Yeah.
And so I'm really happy that I can put some of my effort and some energy into this. Yeah. So that's the big thing coming up. No headstands are necessary. I am teaching a modified version of headstands. You do not have to do, please don't even do a head. Don't even think about it as a headstand. Yeah. I'm not, you know, I stopped doing headstands. I never really did them. Like I could do one occasionally. Yeah. Like I would do one for a photo, but I stopped teaching them. I don't do shoulder stands. I don't teach shoulder stand. I mean, years ago. So I don't know if this had something to do, if my injury had something to do with practice from long ago. You know, and then, you know, my doctor had said, like, just it goes. And then one day you just get out of bed or you, and all of a sudden it's really bad. Right. So it wasn't like I did a headstand, I came out and everything was horrible. It was just like it happened over time. But yeah, I haven't done those poses, haven't taught those poses in a very, very long time. So you don't
have
to do a headstand.
Real yogis don't need to do headstand.
Yeah. I mean, and that is one thing when we're talking about, you know, Instagram and, you know, and I even make jokes in my class, you know, like, oh, Instagram, you have to do a one finger handstands. And I love Instagram, but that's not my practice. You know, that's not that. And you don't have to be able to do that to do yoga. Right. So, the king of heads, the king of postures, poses. The queen of postures. Yeah. I try to teach a very, you can make class really hard class. Without a headstand.
Well, cool. Well, it was delightful to get to catch up.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. How's Wendy?
Wendy's great.
Good. Please tell her I say hi.
She's very good. She wrote this book with Al on the sutras.
I have
seen it. It's so great, right?
I was waiting for it for years. Yeah. I was so excited to get it. I actually put it in the suggested reading lists for my meditation training. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell everybody about that. Yeah.
We're doing the 300-hour training in a modular format now.
Okay.
And so people come in for a week or two at a time and do like the hands-on module.
Mm-hmm.
And there are
I think that's
modules.
A great idea.
Yeah. It definitely is easier for people who live out of New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have a very interesting collection of people coming to it.
Well,
and the next one is on philosophy. Mm-hmm. So Mona put together a, like, we always have the bridge training for people who did a 200 hour somewhere else. So she put together this thing that's kind of like that, but it's like one day long, like everything about Ishta at the 200 hour level.
Got it. Some people learn really well that way. You never know,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
They have the time.
That's happening, coming up right before the next 300 modular training.
Great.
So
yeah. Great. Well, I wish you all the luck with that.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye, Peter.
That's today's episode. Thanks a lot for listening to Peter's podcast. I hope that you find real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living through your practice. Please support me on Patreon, rate the podcast, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.